My guest this week on Podcast Them Softly, it was a real treat when I heard I would get the chance to finally talk to him, is Paul Kuriazi. He's the director of Death Machines, Weapons of Death, Ninja Busters, One Way Out, Omega Cop, and we're also going to talk about his most recent film, Forbidden Power. Paul, it's great to finally talk to you, sir.
To talk to you, Ken.
Fantastic. So, you start off, you have a reasonably prolific beginning, and then, like I said, you went and did a bit of a Terrence Malick on us, and came back, you know, some 20 years after the fact. So, I know who you are. There's a lot of people that will listen who know who you are, but for those that don't, could you give us, I guess we could begin with a little bit of how you began, and your inspirations in film, and eventually your training, and then your emergence into the film business?
Yeah, sure. Can. When I was 8 years old, they had Disneyland television, and I saw the making of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. That was Disney's biggest movie at the time, the biggest movie in Hollywood at the time, and I'm 8 years old, and I hadn't seen the movie yet. They hadn't released it, but they showed storyboards and Kirk Douglas talking about fighting the giant squid, and at 8 years, I said, that's what I want to do. So, of course, saw the movie a couple of times and loved it and was always a big movie fan from then on. At age 15, with my dad's 8mm camera, I started filming action movies and synchronized the sound and music with my dad's tape recorder. Then I got into 16mm when I went into film school at San Francisco State. They had a movie department. And I shot, five action karate dramas. They were always dramas. I never did documentaries or experimental films. Won the Berkeley Film Festival twice with two of my action dramas. I had to go into the military because of the Vietnam War, so I chose the Air Force, and I got into the motion picture department in California where they test missiles, and I was did documentary movies and training movies, so I did 4 years of the Air Force. When I got out of the Air Force, I financed my first feature film. I didn't have enough money, so I chose black and white and Techniscope widescreen, and it was about three samurai, Japanese samurai swordsmen. They arrive in England and try to enter a fencing tournament. Low budget, all took place in the forest. They were fighting the knights and just couldn't sell it. It was black and white, and I wish I would have shot in color. And then that gave me, it was a big failure because, financing and credit card debts and things. And I made up my mind, if I get the next chance, and the movie did show at a local theater. And I remember sitting in the aisle, and the kids would be running up for popcorn, and I want to say, hey, sit down, there's an action scene coming. Well, I didn't keep the suspense on the screen to let them know there's an action scene coming. So I decided if I ever get another chance, I'm going to make sure the kids stay in the seat. And I got, for want of a better word, exploited things in their action and color and different genres. So when I got my chance for the movie Death Machines, I was financed by Ron Marchini, and he was a karate champion, made some movies in the Philippines, and he financed that movie Death Machines in California. And I showed him my first feature, so that's the good point of my first feature that I couldn't sell. And he saw my 16mm karate movies, and I was in karate as well as he was, so... Then he hired me, and I made sure Death Machines, as you saw, Kent, it's got gangsters and cops and karate and a couple of nude girls in there. And
everything a grown boy needs.
And a big karate studio fight and a big fight in a police station. We actually blew up a real Piper Cub airplane. Hired a special effects man from Hollywood to do that, and we had bullet squibs, and we had three killers, white, black, and Chinese, and at the time there was what they called the black exploitation films were hot. Chinese movies were coming with Five Fingers of Death. They were being coming in from Hong Kong, going to the main circuit. So I made sure there was all those exploitive things in the movie. I took the movie to Crown International, and they bought it right away. The president of the movie, of Crown, saw it, Mark Tenser, and he bought it. So I know from then on, and I knew how to keep the pace going and to have lots of scenes and short scenes. And then I went and did three more features, as you mentioned. My last one was Omega Cop, that started with Ron Marquis, the Death Machines producer, and had Adam West, Batman, in it. And then I couldn't get another movie going, as you mentioned, from 1983 until now. But what I did, you know, there's that artist feeling, you just got to keep going. And I couldn't sell my scripts and couldn't raise the financing, tried. And then I saw Pulp Fiction, and that, it was, the script was so good, and the movie was so good. And as you know, Tarantino, he kind of used the novel form. Yeah. And I thought, well, this movie would be just as unique as a novel, because the plants and payoffs weren't based on action, they were based on dialogue.
Yeah.
So I turned two of my scripts into novels. Mm. I turned to novels, and then I made full cast audiobooks, and I hired all my heroes that I grew up watching in the theater to do the voices in them. Rod Taylor from The Time Machine and The Birds, Robert Culp from I Spy, 23 total. Henry Silva is an international star. David Hedison from Boys of Bottom of the Sea. I was in heaven in the recording studios. We'd have all the actors at the same time. Frank Sinatra Jr. narrated another one. So it was just wonderful. And all those actors were about 70 years old at the time, but because it's voice only, they could play 40, and they loved it. So I got those audio books made. Now, recently, as you know, the instead of film, they're using video, 4K and 6K video. And one of my buddies from the Air Force has a movie studio in L.A. and in Seattle, Victory Studios, and he got a new 6K Dragon camera, and he's got green screen studio, and you know, Seattle is very picturesque. So one of my novels that I wrote, Forbidden Power, it's a novella, 100 pages,
yeah.
And I always like the empowerment theme. As you know, Lucy with Scarlett Johansson, she's empowered by drugs, and Bradley Cooper, Limitless, he's empowered by drugs. You know, the Wolfman's movies, they're powered by animal bites, and I was trying to think of a new way to do empowerment, because I studied all these years from age 26 when I was in the Air Force. I was studying all these classes of empowerment, so to keep me in the movie business, so I can raise money.
Right, right.
And I always liked that theme, so that's where Forbidden Power came. And I secured some money, and I used my own money to finance Forbidden Power. And then I came up with the unique idea. Nobody's done it yet. The guy's empowered sexually.
Yeah.
For some mysterious reason by this mysterious woman.
Yeah.
And that's where Forbidden Power came from. That's where we are now.
It's great. It's I watched it again last night in preparation for our a chat, along with I watched Omega Cop again last night, and you know, I like to sort of, you know, do a bit of a refresher. But Forbidden Power is a really compelling story. It's the kind of film that you you know, you're watching and you're anticipating, and then sometimes it goes the way you think and sometimes it doesn't, you know. But wonderful performances from the young cast. I'm going to get to chat to your lead actress, Nazanin, is it?
Yes, Nazanin Gurri. Oh, she's terrific.
Yeah.
As you saw.
Yeah, I'm going to get a chance to have a chat with her tomorrow, actually. So, yeah, but I mean, marvelous performances, good tension all the way through. Like, you're sort of sitting on the edge of your seat thinking, oh, geez, where's it going to go? Because, I mean, the way that you did it was sort of a little bit subtle than some of the other films, like you mentioned, Bradley Cooper in Limitless, like he takes the pill and then all of a sudden, you know, a light goes on and starts to do stuff. With this, I like like this sort of gradual, like he notices that he doesn't need his glasses. He notices that the weights in his room aren't heavy anymore. Obviously, his sex drive is greatly amplified, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's great. I like that gradual sort of like, you know, it's almost like, I guess you could say it's almost like a superhero film. He's learning the extent of his abilities and, you know, eventually, you know, embracing them to a fault. But then, of course, as a great sort of side note to that, you have this mystery. You know, she leaves the message, not to spoil it for everyone, but she leaves a message for him and he follows that message. And of course, it leads to, you know, the organization of fellow powered people, as they are. And, you know, so it's great. It's almost like a corporate coven of these.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Kent, because what you're saying is the story unfolds.
Yep.
A lot of movies are one event, and that's great. You know, like Die Hard in the Building, it's one event. A lot of movies are like that. Quentin Tarantino, he even mentioned he likes movies that unfold, which it's not just a single event. And I'm glad you mentioned that you like that. That gradual build up to the discovery of his powers.
Yeah.
You know, and for your listeners, what I've learned, you know, this movie has no stars. And when you have no stars, you got to keep the pace going, and that's just what you were talking about. So I make sure that I had, well, there's 65 scenes in this movie, in a 95-minute movie. You know, so the more scenes you have, I would encourage, you know, your listeners that are planning films, the more scenes you have, not only do you have more pieces of entertainment scenes, but they're shorter scenes. And I learned this from a movie called Day of the Jackal, the original one, in 1972, Fred Zinnemann, who directed High Noon, made that movie. There's no stars in it. It's 2.5 hours long, and it just moves fast. It's about this hitman is going to kill, hired to assassinate Charles de Gaulle, and it's about the police trying to get him before he gets to de Gaulle. It's parallel action. And some of the scenes, Kent, are 10 seconds long, 15 seconds long.
Yes.
And there's no stars, but you can't, everybody I show to, they can't stop watching because it just unfolds and moves so fast. So I would encourage your listeners that are planning a movie to have many scenes and that unfold and connect and that keep the pace going. And as you mentioned, there's you know, once the hero meets the woman, she leaves him that message. So first, it's like, well, is he going to call the woman? There's a suspense. And suspense is not just, you know, hanging off Mount Rushmore, you know, Cary Grant, which is great. But it's like, just want to see more.
Yeah.
So it, once the girl says, call me, then, well, the viewer will wait around to see if he's going to call her and what's going to happen. When she leaves, there's that message on the mirror. And it's like, what does it mean? So now the viewer, maybe stick around a few more minutes. See, Kent, what I do, and I learned since my first movie, is the viewer is sitting there with a remote control. If they're watching it on television or if they're watching a download, even in the theater, they can leave. And they're always making up. There's so much entertainment to see. They're always thinking, well, should I turn this off? And so what I planned is, well, the guy's going to call the girl, the viewer, stick around. Well, he's holding that remote control in his hand when he's watching your movie.
Yeah.
And that's the way I write my scripts, thinking about the viewer holding that remote control, and I don't want him to turn off the movie or leave the theater like they did on my first movie. So that's what I would encourage when your viewers are typing up their scripts, think about that guy sitting at home getting ready to turn off your movie, but you got to keep them watching one more minute and one more minute. Okay, five more minutes, and then they're at the end of your movie. So that's very important, Keith.
Yeah, and it's great advice, but it's also something you don't see too much of course, in a lot of mainstream movies. Usually these big films are based around one event, and it's either happens at the beginning and everything is a domino effect, or everything is building to one event. And it's, you know, that's why, you know, you read reviews of movies, they talk about, oh, you know, that this part of the film lags here. And of course it lags, because there's really only one big carrot in the film that you're either leading up to, or you've seen, and then everything is a result of that action. And it's, you know,
it's well said, Ben.
Yeah.
There's a deadly 50-minute mark in a movie where a lot of movies are cooking, and they get to be around the 50-minute mark, and they start to die out before the last things slow down. And I'll always watch for that, as you know, in Forbidden Power, there's that new woman that's introduced with the red shirt.
Yes,
new woman at the 50-minute mark.
Mm.
And that's another thing I learned. As you saw in Omega Cop, the hero, one by one, meets a woman to rescue. He rescues one, and then he gets another one, and then he meets another one. So we've got three girls that's with him to rescue. We introduce those women one by one. The original script had the hero with one actress,
yeah,
one girl that he rescues, and I told Ron Martini, I said, well, now we got to do three women. He said, oh, it's getting complicated, it's going to be more expensive. I said, Ron, we got to have three women, because we introduce them one by one, and we refresh them, three different types, so maybe the guys watching will like one, or at least one or two, or maybe all three of them. Plus, we got three women for cutaways during various dialogue scenes. We can cut to them. So, as you saw in Forbidden Power, three major women, and then there's two other, about five beautiful women that are introduced one by one. So that's another trick. It doesn't have to be one woman. It could be, as you mentioned, that party group. It could be a new character. But talk about refreshing the audience. Okay, give them something new every once in a while during the course of the story.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah, it's something you don't see as often. I think the last film that was as tightly made and as intense as Forbidden Power, I nearly said Forbidden Love, sorry, Forbidden Power, it was, for me, did you see the movie Get Out?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That movie unfolded very well.
Yeah. Now, that's that like your film is tight. And I mean, it's, you know, it's tight as a nest of Chinese box, you know. yeah, and it just keeps you there. Like you said, we live in an age where too many people can switch over or tune out or turn off or whatever they're doing. But when it's well constructed, like that film and like your film, you sit there with this anticipation, like, is it going to happen? And then finally when you see it happen, oh, but then there's always something else and something else and something else. And it builds, you know. It's like I think it was, who was it? Oh, I forget the name. It's going to disappear. Was it Kazan? It might have been Kazan. No, Billy Wilder. Billy Wilder always says, keep your, one of his rules was like, keep your story building, you know, building and building and building. Don't let it.
William Goldman said that. Maybe you're reaching for that, the writer, which Cassie, the Sundance Kid, he talks about a snowball rolling down the hill,
yeah,
and gaining more and more snow. You got to keep that snowball rolling down the hill, and you got to keep it getting bigger and bigger. And then he said something I always remember. If the only thing that's happening in your movie is what's happening, you better repack your snowball. Get some depth to your story, not just what's happening on the surface. And that's why, you know, my favorite subject is empowerment, as I mentioned, taking all those classes and reading all those books. And that's why I hope the audience, sticks with the hero, because it's what he does with his newfound power.
Yeah.
Remember, started the movie with the quote from Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Most men can stand adversity, but if you want to see their true character, give them some power.
Yeah, and I also like the end quote as well. Though it's paraphrasing, but you know, it's only a crime when good men do nothing, or something to that effect.
That's right. For evil to triumph, it only takes good men to do nothing.
Yeah,
Edmund Burke said that.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, and it sums up the story pretty well, because just like, I mean, these kinds of films are really there's a plethora of superhero films right now. These I always see as the kind of alternative superhero films, because we are dealing with enhanced humans to a fault, whether they're enhanced by drugs or enhanced by the supernatural or enhanced by, you know, whatever the case may be. The oft-quoted line, you know, everyone remembers from Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And
sure.
And this is, of course, they're always cautionary tales. Like, you can, as the old saying goes, what profits a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? This is very much, they're always, I find, cautionary tales as well. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, you know, Kent, I've read a lot of, or seen on YouTube, people that win millions of dollars suddenly in the lottery.
Yeah.
And a lot of people benefit from it, and it happily changes their lives. But some people, as you might have read, or even had a TV show, how the lottery ruined people's lives. And it's amazing. They get $10 million. And, you know, I learned in my empowerment classes, money is power, but it's neutral power. It's neither good, it's neither bad. It's how you use it. It's like dirt. You could use dirt to grow an apple tree and eat the apples, or you can put dirt in your milk and drink it and get sick. So it's how you use it.
Mm.
So as you say, power does have consequences, and it depends on how you use it.
So you've been in the industry a long time, and I'm always curious to ask industry veterans like yourself, you know, you talked about that period in between Omega Cop and of course going into writing and now Forbidden Power. Now more than ever, I mean, it's weird, now more than ever there's the technology available, readily available to make, you know, movies, you know, I mean, people are making movies on their phones, for goodness sake. But you talk about that period, of course, where you couldn't get projects financed and you couldn't, you know, get movies off the ground. You know, we're living, and a lot of people I've interviewed talk about this, where the middle ground in movies, where there used to be quite a lot of films made, has fallen away. As one screenwriter I spoke to said, that essentially the middle class in Hollywood no longer exists. It's either micro budget or low budget and tentpole movies, and that's about it. You know, from your point of view, how do you see the industry's changes and over the years?
The reason I couldn't get a movie off the ground after Omega Cop is we used to have the drive-in circuits, right? Drive-in theaters,
yeah,
with the cars,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they'd have the action. The theaters, you know, downtown places in the cities, and it was called the Action Circuit. In fact, one of my movies, Weapons of Death, broke a house record in New York, and broke a house record in San Francisco. That's in the history of the movie theater.
Wow.
You know, well, these were acting, you know, made the most money of any movie in the history of the movie theater.
Wow.
And then those action and drive-ins, as you know, they started closing down, and they went into the multiplex, you know, around 1985, around where Omega Cop came out. So that action market, where they would double bill action movies and exploitation movies, that actually ended. And as you pointed out, there are either these giant movies, action movies, which I love. I love going to those. And or there's the micro budget movies, and then the very smaller theaters will play some, you know, middle budget movies with as a star or two in it.
Mm.
But that's what actually stopped me. So I did see that change. I mean, I saw it greatly as the action houses and drive-ins closed, because that was the bread and butter of the you know, exploitation movies. Crown International was. Was big for that. Roger Corman's movies, we're all fans of Roger. He's still making movies. And he had to change his strategy as well.
Yeah, it's a shame. And now, of course, I was talking to someone the other day. We were talking about the new process of streaming films, or you know, direct to stream movies that people can just go on either Amazon or Netflix or Hulu or whichever one you choose. And I commented that I thought it was very much sort of a similar return to like the days of VHS. I mean, when VHS came along, there was a need for product. I mean, and people made a lot of films during the period of VHS because there were so many VHS distributors and they needed films. And so there was, you know, a great golden era where, and sadly, a lot of those films didn't survive the transition into to DVD and then eventually digital. They were made specifically for the video market. I made the comment that I think that nowadays this new streaming service could essentially be another run on the bank. And they'll be looking for product because it's a great way for independent filmmakers to bypass ordinary distribution and go straight to streaming and the largest possible audience. What do you think?
Well, that's exactly right what you said. And as far as the history and the streaming, I'm going to put Forbidden Power myself onto Amazon just a year and a half ago. Amazon let people upload their movies just as they were letting people upload their novels and
yes.
books.
Yeah.
So now the independent producer can upload himself on Amazon,
yeah.
and the money goes directly to the bank. And the filmmakers watch on YouTube all these shows they have, and they'll tell you, don't give your movie to a distributor. You know, Ron Marchini gave his two movies to a distributor. I gave Weapons of Death. Distributors never pay.
Mm.
They have a deal where they promise 50-50, but the producer, you, the producer, pays for all the expenses. So when the movie makes a dollar, they take their 50 cents, and then they charge you with 50 cents expenses, and they take the other 50 cents. So even now, people are echoing, all the independent producers are echoing, don't give your money to distributors. They have what they call aggregators, and they're the go-between Netflix and other download places. They used to do that for Amazon, but you can do it yourself on Amazon. So, you know, these filmmakers, they take mortgages against their houses and refinance their cars, as I did, and do a movie on credit cards, then they give the film to the distributor and see nothing.
Mm.
So, nothing back. So, Amazon is the first place, and then you can go to an aggregator or someone that'll sell the movie country by country. So, there's a lot of countries and download places. So that's the main thing. When you finish your movie, you know, you're desperate to get it out usually, and you're looking for a, quote, distributor, and then you see nothing. So, and that has never changed.
Mm.
So, and even now, especially digital, it's easy to pirate the movie.
Yes.
So you have to be careful there. So your listeners should, there's many shows and sites like your website that give information to independent producers, and they should pay attention once they finish the movie to make sure they get their money back.
Sure.
And then they can make another movie.
That's true.
So if I got my money back from Weapons of Death or Ninja Busters, same thing happened with Ninja Busters. The distributor took that and went through that. I had a co-producer that he got in charge, and he gave it to a distributor. And nothing happened. Years later, I found out that distributor went to prison for 8 years because it was in the newspaper. He had five movies that he stole all the money from, and one of them in the newspapers was Ninja Busters, and he went to prison. But that doesn't help because none of the money comes back. Now it's out on Blu-ray with my commentary.
Right.
As well as Death Machine. So your listeners have to take care. Don't give your film just to a distributor and hope he sends you some money.
That's
would
true.
You give your house? You know, you might have a $300,000 house. Would you give your money? Would you give your house to a distributor and say, well, sell my house and maybe send me some money?
Yeah.
Well, we got these, $300,000 movies, and we give them to distributors and never get anything back.
Yeah.
So listeners should do their homework on that.
That's true.
Another thing I'll tell you, Kent.
Yep.
Well, I was mentioning a very important thing. You mentioned the actors. We have a lot of actors in this movie, Forbidden Power. The lower budget movies don't have so many actors. stories usually,
yep.
or characters. And there's people that write books on how to do low-budget movies, and they'll tell you, do it in one location, only have three actors. And I encourage the independent producers to, you know, think bigger. As you saw, there's about five lead actors and 20 supports, and then totally with all the extras, and there's 150 of them. And I encourage them not just to, you know, as you saw, we have all those different locations and sets and, you know, variety in the movie. So just don't do the one location that people encourage you, encourage the independents to do.
Sure.
Try to think bigger.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll mention, very important, always pay your actors.
Yes.
Because, you know, if I was to get, there's really something, Kent, if I was to get, if Tom Cruise asked me to direct his next movie,
right.
and I tell my family, the first thing they're going to ask, are they going to ask me, oh, what's the movie about? Or are they going to ask me, when do you film it? Or how did you meet Tom? No, the first thing they're going to ask me is, what are you getting paid? It's just human nature.
Yes.
So, you know, I approached all these actors in Seattle. And I knew the first thing their husbands, wives, boyfriends, parents are going to ask, how much are you getting paid?
Yeah.
So this budget was this was non-union, but I paid them the Screen Actors Guild scale.
Yeah.
For what they call ultra low budget movies, it's $125 a day. That way, when the boyfriends, so we had a lot of women in this movie, when the boyfriends, the husband says, what you're getting paid, what are you getting paid? They could say, Screen Actors Guild scale.
Yeah.
Which they did.
Yeah.
One woman in the movie, not our lead, but the boyfriend was jealous, didn't want her to make the movie, and he wouldn't rehearse with her, and she says, I'm going to make this movie exactly the way it's written. Now, for women, you saw we have some nude scenes and bed scenes, and
yeah.
You know, and I spelled that out exactly in the script.
Yeah.
It's very important for independent to, you know, I said, you're in bed, and I put 7 seconds or 10 seconds, or the girl rips off her shirt at one point, but she's wearing a bra, I put that in there, wearing a bra.
Yeah.
So make sure you have the nudity or sensuality to exactly put it in the script.
Sure.
And this one woman I'm talking about, actress, she told the boyfriend, I'm going to do this movie exactly as it says in the script. And he wouldn't rehearse with her, and she broke up with him.
Huh.
But and she actually broke up with him because he wouldn't support her on it. But she was able to tell him, I'm getting paid Screen Actors Guild scale.
Yeah.
So you know, and same thing with the crew, you got to pay everybody, but especially the actors,
yes.
and especially the women, the actresses, pay them you know, what you can, and if you can, pay that $125 a day, and you can say, all my actors are getting Screen Actors Guild scale. Sounds sure. good, sounds professional. And the actors treat your project professionally, which all my actors did.
Well, there you go, folks. A lot of words of wisdom from a great veteran of the business, Paul. As a fan first, always a fan first, as much as this is a show and everything, but I always, at the end of the day, I'm a fan of movies, big fan of your movies. So a big call out to everyone, let's check out Forbidden Power. And as Paul said, his some of his other films are now available on Blu-ray, Ninja Busters, Death Machines. They're great movies. Check them out, Paul. It's wonderful to speak to you. It's wonderful that you're back making movies. I hope you go on and make some more. And it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today.
Thanks, Ken. It's always fun to talk to a movie fan. They asked Quentin Tarantino, what's your goal for the future? And his answer was to remain a movie fan.
That's true.
So that's it.
My guidance counselor once asked me, he says, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I said, in a mirror. So yeah, that's my 5-year plan. But anyway, thank you very much, Paul. I hope that the film gets seen by the largest possible audience. It's a great intense thriller. I hope everyone gets to check it out, Forbidden Power. It's a great, great movie. I really enjoyed it. I hope other people do too. And I hope you, like I said, get it out there to as many people as can see it. And I suppose it will eventually come to DVD or something, do you think?
Oh, yeah. We'll take it right up the ladder. Yeah. First Amazon, and then by various countries, and then DVD.
Yeah.
Which will be sold on Amazon as well.
That'll be great. Are you planning on doing a commentary and all that on the film as well?
Yeah, sure will. I enjoy doing that. I got praised for my commentaries because I prepare for them and make notes, and they're to the movie. I actually watch the movie and talk about every scene that's up on the screen. So I do good commentary work.
That's great. Can't wait for that. Paul, it's been an absolute thrill, mate. Love your movies. Glad to see that you're making more. Hope you go on and make some more. The movie gods willing that you get to make some more movies, and I look forward to that. And I hope that everyone out there listening will check out Forbidden Power. It's a great film. Paul's a great filmmaker and a great gentleman. Thank you, sir, for your time today.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, sir.